listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Waru Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you can support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WaruiDesho or email us at waruidesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show.
Ladies, gentlemen, MBs, welcome to Waru Desho Streamer 4, episode 11, covering banana fish. We've given you twice in 1 week, twice the fish, twice the dish. But with me here today, as always, is my, you know, esteemed colleague from across the pond. It's, as always, the Soul Doctor.
Oi, mate. Two times the bananas. Two times and the peel.
Tonight, we're going to be covering episode 11 of Banana Fish, which is called The Beautiful and the Damned, which sounds like, you know, one of E.L. James's lesser-known fan fictions.
Who's E.L. James?
She's the writer of 50 Shades of Grey, which was in itself Twilight fan fiction back in the day.
See, I thought of another vampire property, and that would be Queen of the Damned by Anne Rice. So that's where my mind went, is this is the next Anne Rice book.
Hello everyone in chat. But I am going to please my inner goddess by helping myself to a beer, which is, today it's Timothy Taylor's Landlord, or Tim Tay as you call it in the pub.
Tim Tay.
Yeah. What a Tim Tay, love.
Why Landlord? Like, what's...
Well, I don't know, it's like the name of the beer, I guess.
What says... I don't know, yeah, okay. I mean...
Pub Landlords, there's your answer.
You just, yeah. Beer stuff.
Beer stuff.
I'm not a big beer person, so I don't know the logic behind a lot of the beer names anyway.
It's whatever sounds good. I mean, I know, for example, that over there, you know, you Yanks have, you know, Natty Light, as they call it.
Oh.
Look, God. I was getting that for free at CO Taku last year,
so
I was
bad.
Not complaining. I was not complaining. Anyway, without further ado, I'll do. It's decidedly average, I'm very sorry to say.
Oh, no, Tim Tay, you let us down. You let
Tim
us
Tay,
down.
Like, Championship Beers, 1858. Was that like, is the 1858 like when they last won the championship? It's been a while, I reckon.
Pre-American Civil War brew.
Indeed. All right, so let's talk about episode 11 of Banana Fish. Do you want to talk about how the Twitter polls are doing so far, though, Doc?
I do.
Yesterday,
I do.
As it happens. Not had very long, unfortunately.
No. This is an unusual schedule. Speaking of, our longtime chat devotee, Tallulah Bell, just finished our episode 10 video 15 minutes ago. So she's able to launch right into the episode 11 talk. So that's pretty
amazing.
Cool. And
last time on Banana Fish.
Last time on Banana Fish. Speaking of that, you just keep on with the segues. Luther rightly points out, I looked this up earlier, The Beautiful and the Damned, neither 50 Shades Twilight related nor Anne Rice related.
Thank fuck.
But is an F. Scott Fitzgerald story. I feel like,
yeah,
it's like you said, they went on Wikipedia and you're like,
yeah, I
which
said
title,
I literally
which
said...
title fits best the plot of this episode.
Feels like something out of Family Fortunes, like Banana Fish episode 10. Our survey said, who thought this, like, which title was the most appropriate? You said The Beautiful and the Damned. Our survey says,
yeah,
you know, it's not the noise. And I'm very fond of using that in podcasts, you know, for like comic sound effects.
Yes,
I'll get something like, oh, is this character doing this?
Oh man, now I've got to get some Family Feud, Family Fortune sound effects for our podcast now, for our soundboard. We've needed to add some new things to it for a while.
Yeah, that's true.
But here we go.
Anyway, Twitter polls.
Twitter polls. From yesterday. So you still have 5 whole days to get on this.
Get on it.
And I'm retweeting them now as I look at them from the @WateryDesho Twitter account. Is Yutlung's emotional vulnerability in episode 10 and prior real or an act? 82% say real. He's a real person.
As opposed to the robot that he is. Like, you know, if he gets conks on the head hard enough, like one of the screws falls out. My God, Yutlung was a Terminator all along. I knew it.
As opposed to like a cardboard villain or something. So, next poll. Does hashtag banana fish make you sad? 84% say yes in all caps, and I agree.
Mm-hmm.
We had quite a large number of people vote already in this poll, so feel free to add your own say here and influence the number. I'll try to remember to read these ones out in future because they won't be closing for a while. So we'll have several polls to read for episode 12.
Fair enough. All right. So, without further ado, there is actually a mild bit of ado before we can go further. Mm-hmm. There's your segue into that. That was pretty good of me. Anyway, so we had a comment on our previous stream that only happened yesterday that was something about the idea of target audiences saying that we were.
Right.
Now, I just want to clarify some stuff I've said previously, just so we're all on the same page. When I say that myself and Doc are not the target audience, that's partially true in my opinion, because, you know, I do enjoy a good crime drama. And I mentioned before that Boys was not specifically my thing, but I'm happy with it when it's used in series. But that's just speaking for myself. That's not a, you know, a condemnation on the genre in whole. But the reason I keep bringing this particular point up about target audiences and what we bring to the discussion about Banana Fish is that I've often read a lot of times, you know, that there's way too many, you know, white, straight men viewpoints in the discourse as it is. And I, you know what? I will agree.
The disc horse has too many white jockeys.
Indeed. Oh, I just got that. Anyway, oh my God. Right. There's not enough landlord in my landlord, so excuse me while I drink my landlord.
This podcast is the green horse for anime. Put your money on the green horse for anime.
If we keep doing this, it's going to end up going to the fucking glue factory is what it is. Anyway, right. So the point I'm trying to make with this is that I do agree with that sentiment, but at the same time, you know, like if you at least approach a work honestly and maturely, as I hopefully am trying to do when I'm not making too many dick jokes. I don't think, you know, that you should be stopped from engaging in a discussion, but I also think you should be very wary of, you know, what you bring to it and not try and speak out of term about stuff that you quite frankly know fuck all about. Like, you know,
yes.
When it comes to what this story means to gay people or to people, you know, who are lesbian or bi or et cetera, I cannot answer.
Or people that are deeply invested in boys love genre, like regardless of whether or not they're part of the LGBTQ plus community.
Quite right.
Those people exist.
Right.
So yeah.
Yep, quite right. Or even career criminals. Amelia, I'm not sure what the overlap is for that. Like, you know, I mean, do we have any, like, you know, long-term gangsters who, like, raised when, like, we're in the half since we were young? Like, man, Banana Fish speaks to me on so many levels. But the point...
Amazon Prime, it's streaming in prison.
But the point I'm trying to get to is this, like, the only reason I keep bringing that up is I just want to remind myself and in turn remind you all that, you know, we are approaching this from a perspective that will limit what we can truly say and what we can truly, you know, get into. And I don't want to speak out of turn on stuff that I don't know anything about. And I trust you all to, you know, say that to me or Doc if we did indeed start mouthing off about things we quite frankly know fuck all about.
And you have already. So thank you.
So exactly. So please continue that. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying it just as, you know, again, a pulse check kind of thing. Let's just, you know, reground ourselves, reground where we're going with this. So when I start talking about stuff that does involve, you know, the homosexual elements of the show, I'm not, you know, hopefully coming out of turn, or at least I'm getting across, I'm trying not to. Mm-hmm. That's all it is there for. And at the end of the day, like, you know, target audience is be damned. If you actually like a product, regardless of who you are and what makes you you, that's irrelevant. I think Banana Fish is a fucking brilliant show. And even though, you know, the mangaka, like, well, I wasn't born when the mangaka made it for a start, so they obviously couldn't have conceived, right, I'm writing this for Shaden, you know, all those many years, you've been a little time capsule.
They use their crystal ball.
Clearly. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But that being said, like, you know, I just wanted to make that clear that, yep, it's not necessarily for me, but I still love it, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, you know, you can target audience, but you'll always find people outside of that who will like it in varying numbers. Mm-hmm. All right, with that out of the way, let's actually talk about episode 11. So episode 11 starts off with, you know, good old Max at eBay finding, I think it's, what was his name again? His colleague, Charlie, yeah. So they end up arriving at Charlie's, you know, apartment, and Charlie's looking and thinking, Jesus Christ, what kind of wild party have these guys been to? And, well, the wildest party one can imagine, but, well, they weren't technically invited and they didn't really want to be there, so kind of how things go, unfortunately. But yeah, they, you know, report what's been going on. Golzi's mansion has basically been razed to the ground at this point. And he's just stood there looking at it like, oh, shit. The paperwork on this is going to be a fucking bitch. The media are all over it as well as it happens. So that's where the segue comes in from the scene with Max, Charlie, and eBay. Because Charlie's actually seeing on the news, like, the leader of the Corsican Mafia, Golzi's house, has been razed to the ground. And now the weather.
CNC, the best CNC. Rip-off news network or whatever it is. Not CNN.
That's not the last rip-off we'll get. I think it's PepCon or something like that later.
Oh, so good. Oh yeah, the beverage. I didn't actually look at the label. I should have done. That's a botch by me. I should have looked at that.
I do love it when they start doing things like this, like Pizza Tent or whatever, you know. They're always good
pizza
fun.
Pizza Tent!
That's always the good shit.
Man,
anyway,
this reminds me of, in Code, boy, I always mispronounce this, Gias. Gias. They got actual Pizza Hut and Pepsi to sponsor.
Wow!
To like, put their logos and shit in the anime. And it was like, it reminded me of when Crazy Taxi first came out and people were losing their shit of like, holy shit, it's the actual KFC logo in the city. And just like, who cares?
Oh, you're never going to do any better than Pepsi Man the Game, though, to be honest, on that front. That actually exists.
Yes.
And it's the most amazing thing ever. It has a theme song. And it's,
man,
just incredible.
The only reason I know about this is because I've told you before about Video Game Championship Wrestling, and Pepsi Man was a character in it. And the theme song was that, his opening entrance theme was that song. And it was
Pepsi
amazing.
Man!
Yeah. Pepsi
so
Man
good.
Was so awesome.
All right. So anyway, Max, Max, eBay, and Charlie have all reunited briefly, but they're not the focus of this episode for much of it. Instead, we then get a reuniting between Ash, AG, and Ash's gang. So they all, like, turn up at this site, really run down flat, and everyone's really excited to see him. And Ash immediately starts doling out instructions. Right. First off, here's what he's doing.
This two hours of sleep. That's all. That's what
I
mean.
Oh, sorry.
I'm not trying to signal victory, Shadon. We've achieved victory. No. Sorry about that.
God.
I didn't mean to throw you off. Please continue.
All right. So yeah, indeed. Instructions include 2 hours of sleep, get me an iPad, you know, get me a fucking big bag of Cheetos, get the fucking fly over here, whoever he is.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The fly.
Get Jeff Goldblum on the line. What if it was, like, because when did The Fly come out as a film? And what if they just knew Jeff Goldblum
as
The Fly?
It was the late 80s, if I remember correctly.
I think so.
Could have been. I don't know.
I saw that shit when I was a little kid, and it scared the hell out of me.
I did too, to be fair. Yeah, that's not a film for the faint of heart. Anyway, so yeah, Ash like says 2 hours sleep, no more, no less. Don't wake me up before then. Everyone's like fucking petrified, waking up Fred. Falls asleep, cuts to the credits, or rather the opening, I mean to say. The opening, unfortunately, is not 2 hours long, so it's kind of a time skip. But anyway, imagine if that just played in real time over and over until he woke up again.
We're going for realism. We're going outside of the box.
We're going for bored.
We want our audience to take a nap.
Indeed. So, immediately after credits, we open with one of my most favourite things currently, which is watching Arthur get fucking dunked on. Because he's walking behind Galzine, and Galzine is just cheering him out saying, right, you useless little fucking pipsqueak. You couldn't, A, catch or round up all of the gangs as I asked you to do. Ash has now escaped, and you brought the fucking media here. What are you going to do next? You're going to shit on my fucking rug while you're at it, you useless fucking cockstain? That's at least how I imagined it in my head. But yeah, that was a great way to start the episode. And funnily enough, it's actually bookends it because it's going to end with Arthur being useless as well. I mean, that's going to be my running gag from now on is that I genuinely don't get the impression Arthur's good at anything. Like, he'll try to toast a fucking bagel and he'll burn his house down.
It's like losing in like games of Sorry to the other gang members that have nothing to do with skill.
Exactly. All right. So after that chewing out, the various gang members are waiting for, you know, the 2 hours to, and it does pass, and then AG's like, wait, and you're going to wake him up, and everyone's just like, no, I ain't doing it. No one's, you know, doing that. But AG's like, ah, you pansy. So he goes over and does indeed wake him up, and
just
Ash just kind of like, just smacks him, yeah.
Too
now
good.
Look here, you Miss Yashlik, you get out of your bed and clean your room right this second.
You're going to be late for school, young man.
Have you done your homework?
Yeah.
Anyway.
And they are afraid that he is going to meet a swift end for doing that. But that's not what happens.
Nope. It all works out fine. I mean, Ash just wakes up looking a bit groggy, which is understandable considering he, you know, was really badly wounded previously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So after that, they just start, you know, cleaning up. Like, Ash goes gets a shower because, well, he's covered in wounds and all that. So that's the thing. But also, I'm of the opinion that he's doing that because he feels, like, soiled in a certain sense. I mean, there is going to be the repeated motif of blood on my hands, which, while not literal, I mean, I've mentioned this before in previous podcasts and streams of thought we've done, but generally speaking in fiction, like, the act of taking the shower, usually if you use it in a way that's not designed to be titillating, is often as a metaphor for cleansing or being clean again after a particular moment that leaves you, you know, feeling soiled, as I say.
It's also
and it
us.
Might not be... Yeah. It might not be, you know... Sorry, go on.
Sorry, I'm sorry. God, we're tripping over each other. I was only going to add that it's also often the setting for... intimacy or vulnerability.
Exactly.
Yeah. See this episode as we go on.
Oh, this entire episode for the most part. But yeah, after all that, Ash, you know, gets out, starts playing with his iPad while AG gives a wonderful inner monologue saying, like, Ash, scourge of the underworld, like, you know, incredibly fearsome. And I'm just there thinking, he's fucking playing Hearthstone or some shit on it, isn't he? Like, he's just there, like, right, how many packs did I rack up last night? Ding,
like, oh,
ding,
level.
Ding. Ooh, legendary.
Some
ding,
free rolls.
Ding, ding, ding.
Right.
Like, you think he's doing crime on that? And I suppose if he is, if, you know, he counts him, like, you know, running a mill rogue or whatever the current meta is. But anyway. So, that's happening. And he doles out more miner.
He had to restart the Bitcoin miner, the botnet. Mm.
Well, that's not the last time I'm going to talk about cryptocurrency in this particular stream, as happens. But yeah, he sends his various gang members off to go do what they need to do. And this leaves Ash and AG alone for much of the rest of the episode, and they actually start talking in a way that's completely, utterly different from how it's been previously.
Yes.
We're looking at, like, AG is himself, but Ash is a different person now that he's only got a moment to breathe. And when I was watching this, I have to say, like, initial things like, oh, this is a bit of a tonal shift. But don't worry, they will address the events of the previous episode with, you know, the correct amount of maturity and time that is necessary.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's given all the instructions now, like, go find, you know, who all the gangs are, their races, their numbers, etc., etc. You know, birthmarks, facial features, you know, amount of stubble, etc., etc.
Amount of stubble. And then he has a lunch date.
He has a lunch date,
quite charming.
It is very charming.
The pumpkin
this
story.
This is also, by the way, where the fly also turns up in a bit as well.
Yes. The unfortunate fly.
Yeah. I have to say, by the way, like, we do get, as you say, the pumpkin story, which is Ash relating, you know, his fear of pumpkins from when he was much younger. Because of an incident when he was, during Halloween, when he was, like, 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, like, if I showed the clip of that out of context, then showed, like, a clip of Ash murdering his way through a bunch of fucking people in the previous episode, so he's the same person, people would say no, and they'd be half right.
Right.
So that I found very telling.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the fly turns up, and the fly is a weapons dealer. He is also, much like his namesake, he's a bit of a non-mystic terrorist, some super fly man. Because he looks styling. He's a gun dealer with class.
Yes.
Even if he does look a little bit like a JoJo's character, but, you know, the JoJo characters look great.
Like a bit of a stereotype, unfortunately.
This is true.
I thought that there's if Banana Fish ever gets dubbed, so the ADR director has quite a choice to make. Hopefully they won't go in a bad direction there.
Indeed. But yeah, so after the fly, you know, departs, having left all, you know, the various guns and whatnot behind, Ash and AG, like, you know, Ash is looking out the window, and then it's like, AG tries to dab him with some ointment to try and start disinfecting his wounds, because they still haven't really got around to doing that. And AG completely Ash completely recoils from this, like, what the fuck are you doing? What the hell is this? Now, here's the thing. Bear this in mind, but you might recall there was a previous moment in an episode where, you know, I think one of the police officers put his hand on Ash's shoulder, and he's like, don't touch me! And he's like, very, you know, very defensive. This is completely and utterly, like, cartoonish playfulness. It's like, what are you doing? Not as opposed to, fucking touch me again and I'll cut your dick off. Right. So, with completely different thing, even though it's still kind of the same action, which, again, mm-hmm. we're learning more and more about, you know, how he's changed as a person in relationship to AG and such. So, yeah, you know, we got more of the, you know, fan service here with, you know, AG, like, mending Ash's wounds while he's half naked. There's, you know, your money shots and all that. And he's also gathering info on the murder of the actual presidential candidate from the previous night.
We don't know what party it is. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume it is a Democratic candidate.
I would guess so. It would seem likely, unless, you know, it was some Bob Dole character or some shit like that.
Right, like someone standing in the way of this of Dino's guy getting the nomination in their own
anime
party.
Bernie Sanders.
Oh,
I'm getting closest to my goal of killing Doc with bad jokes. It's working.
Goldine playing the role of the Democratic National Convention.
Fucking backstabbing.
God.
It also turns out, by the way, that AG is completely and utterly useless at bandaging wounds. Because, like, I don't know if this is actually meant to be a follow-on from the pumpkin thing, but Ash is, like, almost, like, dressed like a mummy afterwards. And I thought, is that Lynx somehow? It might be.
I don't know. In my mind, he was just... He did that to fuck with him because he was complaining... Because Ash was complaining about...
Well, there's not.
About it. But that would be funny if they were somehow, you know... Mm-hmm. If there's some sort of Halloween theme happening.
Indeed. Meanwhile, elsewhere, back at Charlie's place, Max and eBay are going through psychological counseling, and... When I say that, the camera angle made it literally look like Max was doing therapy to eBay. Because he's lying back on the couch like this, and the great shot makes, like, so tell me about your childhood. Honestly.
Yes.
But what they're actually discussing is, in turn, about Ash and AG and, like, you know, where they're up to, are they safe, what's going on. There's assertions that AG is, like, you know, a completely boring, you know, personality-free person. which is, I don't know if like that was meant to be like a little bit of a meta thing, like of people commenting on, you know, what the show, like, oh god, AJ's such a fucking clean cut, like, pretty, I'm like, look, maybe he is and maybe he's not, but that's not entirely the point, because of course, you know, characters can and will change over time. But yeah, they're having a couple of drinks while they're talking about this. There's an excellent observation
pour me a glass.
Yeah. Put some scotch in my scotch. I need it. It's been a long fucking day.
Exactly.
eBay makes a very interesting observation, though, which is that he recalls specifically the scene at Cape Cod in which Ash is showing AJ how to shoot a gun. And he says, this seems like it would have been two regular boys talking to each other were it not for the gun. Which is about as on the nose as the show has got this point with literally what the current divide is between normality and not. Like, you know, the activity is learning to shoot a gun for self-defense, which, yeah, that's a thing in America, I get, but this is the context, you know, of one of them being a career criminal who is currently on the run from his, you know, sponsor, or owner, as you are calling. So, like, eBay's observation is basically telling the audience, yep, this is the central conflict. It's right here. It's right here in front of us.
And Max, after that, Max deduces that, or is it, I can't remember if it's eBay or Max that makes the point, but out of that scene comes the idea that Ash can only be young around AG, that AG brings forth his youth, his age, his, and by that I mean young age, and his, like, I don't know, just that part of himself that has to be buried so he can lead a gang.
Yeah, pretty much. But anyway, that wraps up, and unfortunately Ash cannot sleep. And this then leads into the scene in which, well, all the walls crumble, the dams go down, heartstrings being plucked like a fucking harp, he's shaking, he, you know, weeps and confesses to AG about what's happened and how he feels like his hands are soaked with blood. And I have to say, like, AG says some stuff here which I found really mature. Like, you know, look, I'll tell you this now, maybe it'll not mean something right now, but it will later. I will be there. I thought that was a fucking astounding line. For a character who comes across as incredibly, you know, well, not incredibly, but he comes across as not exactly world-wise or anything like that, that was such a wonderfully mature thing to say. And it culminates in Ash basically weeping into his lap. And I was like, man, this is the moment. Like, this is the moment where things are at their most peaceful. And well, that's it. We're going back up gradually from here. Shit's going to hit the fan again soon enough, as the show is wanting to
climb the steep side of the mountain. This scene fucking got me, man. Like,
it was magnificent.
Unbelievable. Like, all the elements really came together. Sound, visuals, the shot selection, the direction, the voice acting, like, they just sung. It's beautiful, beautiful singing, and harmony was magnificent in all of them. I was reminded of a line from, it's probably not particularly in good taste to bring up this property, but I was still reminded of the Rurouni Kenshin OAV series, the prequel OAVs, Trust and Betrayal. And the main character, Kenshin, in those is quite young and similarly quite violent. There's a popular character archetype, I think, just the sort of a young, beautiful boy with that duality of innocence, naivete, Ash, of course, not innocence, but just the youth, that is there. And then also within the same boy is this incredibly skillfully violent, brutal murderer. And so Kenshin, that character is that, and he finds someone to care about and someone that loves him. And there's a scene in it in which a government official says, like, every sword needs a sheath. And you know, in that show, Tomoe is meant to be Kenshin's sheath and prevent him from causing his own destruction. And so I think Eiji is Ash's sheath in a sense. You know, can, as you say, let down all the walls around him. He can kind of anchor himself to him, can pour out his heart, soul, his fears, what torments him. Because human beings need to do that. I mean, and there's no one else that he can afford to do that around, and it's an essential thing for him.
Exactly, especially given all that's happened. Like, he can't not talk. How would you keep that bottled up? It'd be fucking impossible. But I have to echo what you guys have all said in the comments. Like, again, the voice acting from both, fucking sublime. This scene was handled magnificently. And, well, like I say, this is about as peaceful as it gets, so we're going to slowly gear back up to, you know, the balls to the wall fucking insanity of the previous episode, so, oh boy. Anyway, so it's the morning after the night before, and it quite literally is a new dawn. Like, the visual imagery is right there. You've got Ash sitting on the window as light streaks over his face. He feels refreshed. He feels like a regular person again. It is a new dawn in more ways than one. Perhaps it's a bit touch on the nose, but you know what? Fuck it. I'm a fetishist for lighting, you know, tricks and such used to, like, you know, illustrate character moments and character attributes. I did it with Franks. So it was one of the few nice things I had to say about that fucking show.
Oh my god.
So hey, I'm happy with it here as well. But anyway, this is the point in which Ash reveals his cryptocurrency program while he's on the laptop. No, I'm kidding. Of course he's not.
Right.
But he's actually got a plan in mind. He's got things in motion. So he's discussing that with AJ. They, of course, have a bit more banter. And then we get to the Oyster Restaurant. The one Oyster Restaurant in the entirety of New York, just labeled as such. And Ash is there meeting with Max, as it turns out, in disguise. Yep. Well, I already have one, so I'm good. That doesn't work, does it? By the way, fucking loving Ash's Christmas jumper. Christmas jumper.
Yes.
It was a fucking Christmas jumper,
fucking
that shit.
College student home for Christmas look. As soon as he was, like, hacking on the computer or whatever, I was like, Megane! Glasses!
I was about to say, like, I love that he also had glasses. Like, I should in theory be annoyed at that, like, oh, he's doing geeky stuff and now he's like, oh, that's just cliche stuff. But you know what? I'm fucking rolling with it. This is good fun.
It's great. And Max has that fucking mustache.
Of course he does. So here's what's happening.
The I fathered a child mustache.
Yeah, exactly. So here's what's happening, right? They're pretending to be father and son while they're eating. And Ash has a plan. And he literally says to Max, I want you to buy me a condo. And I'm like, okay.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Whoa, say what you just said again.
I want you to buy me a condo.
Okay. That's not
what
I heard.
What did you think I said?
I thought you just said, Ash says to Max, I want you to buy me a condo. And I was like, there's a father-son relationship you can get behind, right? Dad.
When I have a son of my own and he says that to me, I'm just saying, well, go buy it your fucking self. If you've got balls big enough to use one of them, you've got balls big enough to go to the fucking store and do it yourself.
What do I look like? Your vending machine.
Not fucking pocket change here. Jesus Christ. But yeah, he wants to buy a condo. And Max is all like, wait, what's going on here? And then we get the Gendo Ikari moment, which was just incredible. Because,
too good.
So I can't really do it. So I don't have anywhere to lean my arms, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm having to suspend mine in the air.
So yeah, Ash lays out all of it, right? What he's been up to. So recall that we said previously that Ash is Dino's weak spot as much as he is, like, you know, his pet. Well, that gets proven 1,000 times over, almost to the tune of several million, I suppose, if you want to be really accurate.
Yeah.
Because in an amazing little montage that I thought was just going to go in a comedic angle that I'll tell you about in a second. As Ash is explaining this, Dino gets a guy bursting into the room saying, Papa, we got a call from the New York Stock Exchange. Your company's gone fucking bust. And he's like, what?
That was beautiful.
And then another guy comes in a cut later and says something else like, this company's got... I literally thought that was going to keep happening. I thought Arthur was going to come in and say,
all the
boss,
goose money is gone.
Yeah, the goose is cooked. Quite literally. The goose is cooked.
Yeah. Yes.
I often
they deserve. Listen, if you use the acronym GOOSE for any big multinational billion-dollar product, you deserve to be hacked. Goose,
exactly.
Is that the best you can do? Goose? Come on, mm-hmm. man.
Yeah. So, as it turns out, Ash, one time, unfortunately, when he was, you know, being used by Dino, he wasn't paying attention to anything that was going on. He was taking note of what was over somewhere else, specifically Dino's password for all of his accounts. Dino, by the way, has never heard of two-factor.
He put spyware on the computer somehow. While
a keylogger, yeah.
While
keylogger.
Dino was, you know, enjoying
well, not at the
himself.
Same time. He wasn't there
what
doing
if
that
he did,
long.
Though? That would have, I think he did. What I That's what I pictured.
No, I don't...
They're,
no,
they're
I don't
by the
that.
Desk, and Dino is sort of...
enraptured
in fog, and
Ash
is making
no.
noises, but then leans over, and then goes back. This is what I picture.
Oh.
And he's like, I'm fucking you in more ways than one, old man.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
He deserves that shit.
But anyway, because Dino has never heard of two-factor authentication... Seriously, right?
You kill me with these technology jokes, man. Always.
My Amazon Prime account is more secure than this shit. What the fuck are you doing, Dino? You useless, bald-headed motherfucker. Jesus Christ, I'm surprised someone hasn't rinsed his account before now. Like, do you reckon Dino responded... No. Do you reckon Dino responded to one of those Ugandan general emails legitimately? Of course he fucking did. I mean, this would be a great plan. I'll give you my details right away.
A real Nigerian prince? I wonder how pretty he is. Send headshots after I send money. Like,
God.
I wonder what happened in the manga when there was no... You know, when the hacking wasn't a thing. Like, I wonder how Ash, if the whole stock manipulation thing was a thing, and if so, how it was carried out.
Verbal password, perhaps?
I'm sure folks in the chat will let us know, but please
yeah,
do.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting.
Curious.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting to say. But yeah, what Ash has done is he's basically, you know, got the Goose Fund to himself in dirty money, but he can't actually buy the condo himself because he's still a minor, and therefore he's having Max do it in cold hard cash, which will give him a new base of operations.
That's not suspicious at all.
Well, look, it's New York.
That's true. No, you know what? You're right. Also, this is like where the tension of it being said in the modern day, but also originally written in the 80s, come into play. Because I think in today's sort of hyper secure kind of world, it would be examined, but a transaction would probably be much more expedient back then.
Ah, they were still hacking the manga. Fair enough.
Was there like a giant mainframe that Ash had in his house?
I think Galzine probably had one of the old, you know, like early Apple Macs, or possibly an MSX, maybe. No, Commodore 64.
A Commodore, right.
There we go.
Right.
Yeah. Commodore 64. But anyway,
Ash, I'm booting up the Gianna sisters, but while it's loading, let's do something else.
So, while they're having this discussion, Max asks about AG. And he says, basically, look, right, AG, we gotta take him with us. We'll take him off your hands. And Ash, while looking away from Max very sheepishly, says, he's more safe with me.
Yep.
Put a pin in that, because that's going to be a talking point in a bit. Uh-huh. A very big talking point, actually, because I think that Ash, unfortunately, is... I'll save it. But there's something suspect going on under the currents there, and I'll explain why. But anyway, so Dino is obviously none too pleased about this. He basically loses his shit. Ash, of course, does get the condo. Max and Ash part ways in the street after discussing a couple of things. Mm-hmm. And Max makes the assertion in his own head after they've gone that, you know, Ash can only be a regular person with AG. Final closing moments of this show are Arthur doing his own, you know, we're going to warship like Ash did. Except because he's Arthur and therefore he's absolutely fucking useless.
Hashim, Arthur launch.
Yeah, like, because he's really, really fucking useless. He... Like a car with four flat tires, basically. He says, right, okay, we're going to go find these fuckers. And one of the goons we see in that meeting is killed by Ash's own men. Very sneakily, like, while on the subway. Like, that's the scene immediately after. I'm like, you're off to a great start there, Arthur. Fantastic work.
That scene ruled.
I'm just going to say, right, to quote Dodgeball, he could not hit water if he fell out of a boat. Honestly.
It's a good line.
It's a great line, and it's a great way to end an episode as well. Like I said, seeing Arthur fail miserably at everything he tries just brings joy to my heart. It warms the cockles right here.
Man.
Great.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is the episode.
That scene where I just have my notes in all caps. Murder. Murder.
Owned just... war-like. Got ganks.
That... He just died. And for some reason, when Arthur... And I'm sure this was intentional by the artists and director, like, that guy is who my eye was drawn to immediately when Arthur was giving out his marching orders, you know, in the...
They very clearly established him as a person, so you knew what happened next.
Yeah, we're going to war and all that, and then, you know, he's on the... And then they're on the same train, and I was like, okay, what's gonna happen here? Like, you know, is Ash not gonna know what's happening? Is he gonna be tracked? Like... And I definitely thought this would be a scene where Arthur's guys came out on top, but like, sweet Jesus, I mean,
his name was Wookiee in the manga because he was a Star Wars rep. The look on your face then was a picture.
Are you kidding me?
If we ever become Switch esports pro streamers, that's an emote face right there from Doc. That's a paid fucking emo. That was incredible. Wow. The more you know, eh? The more you fucking know. All right. Well, Doc, do you want to punch it first, Chewie, or shall I on the talking points?
I can't believe that. That is like Mr. Popo level of racist shit. What the fuck? Just floored. That's horrible. Oh my god. Wow.
Oh boy. Yes, please, Lufa, send us the screenshots of, you know, that, so we can truly appreciate it in its, you know, in original intended form. Anyway, Doc, do you want to go first?
I hope the references are better than this. This seems very bad. Very, very bad.
Talking points.
All right.
Okay, talking points.
Here I go.
Do you want to go first, or shall I?
Yep. Yes, I will go first. So, let's see. I've got so many. The problem is, so I'll try to go through them quickly. The problem is just making sure... to write in a way that I can later read should be a higher priority for me. But, okay. So, I just wanted to highlight the scene in the bathroom between, AG and Ash. That was, that I think can often get, probably overlooked, when thinking about this episode, just because there's a much more memorable scene of vulnerability about the halfway point of the episode. But the early part has the scene in which, you know, Ash is getting ready to take a shower and he's brought soap and a towel by AG and then asks, are you going to ask me about Shorter? And boy... I could just feel in my own stomach the dread that one might feel when someone asks you to talk about something that you just really don't want to fucking talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I hate you on that.
He looks so pained. But I just love it. Speaking of maturity, like, I loved AG's reply. Like, you'll tell me when you're ready. Like, even if it's right now, which it turned out to be, you know, like, the reason I'm not prying into you is not that... It's not like the reaction I had. It's not that I don't want to talk about it. It's not that I'm in denial or running away from it. It's that, like, I wanted to give you your space. And when you're ready to talk about it, I know that we will talk about it. So that's like a level of trust and a level of, just giving someone their own space and being conscientious that I really appreciated. And, you know, when Ash said, you know, I made sure that no one would ever touch him again. I mean, whew, that line, I mean, just underscores that that scene in the last episode with the burning corpse. And so much is happening that I think I didn't fully take time to take stock of, like, that. That's why he's doing it, you know. Not just, like, to give his friend some kind of honorable death ceremony, which I think is what my mind went to by default. He wanted to give him some kind of honorable funeral pyre or something like that, or have some way of sending him off. But it's more than that, you know. It's like, I want to this fire to cleanse off the dirty handprints, and I want to make sure that no one ever touches him or fucks with him again. Yeah. Like, that is... That hit me, man. That's powerful shit.
I mean, I wouldn't have put it past Goldstein and Co. if they had left Shaw's body there to just mail bits of Shaw to him. Graphic as that sounds, you can imagine it.
Yeah.
Like, they already had, you know, violated his, you know, body at that point anyway. Who's to say that they wouldn't do it after the fact just for kicks in front of it? So there is
Totally.
But yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. That's the thing about this episode in a nutshell, is that it... And, like, we finally get the moment in which the characters can breathe. But the all of the breathing this episode is deep exhalation. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
Feels like they finally get a chance to be honest with themselves about the events that have happened. And it's actually really, really nice to see any work of fiction that, you know, takes a step back and kind of looks in with themselves like, that was some fucked up shit, let's actually handle it. As opposed to, you know, the alternative, which is, well, it never bothers me. You know, the more, you know, full machismo kind of thing. That's the ironic thing, actually, when you compare this episode to the previous one. Ash in the previous episode was full Rambo. Like, the jokes we made about them being like Arnie and Rambo were half jokes, but there was a half truth to it. But here he's not. He's open with his feelings in time. Not something that, you know, he immediately bursts out. Like, what? Like that.
Yeah, that's I did cock the wrong part of my finger gun. You wouldn't do the barrels, not down the barrels up here.
So, oh boy, that was right. Okay, anyway, but and then we start to see like the layers peel away. Like he's very, you know, all business in front of his his gang. eBay notes that, you know, with how Ash looks at him later, like he's with AG. He's like, "Hey, AG," and he looks at me and goes like that. Like he has a completely different reaction. So that is like this show handles that superbly. I'm really, really impressed with it. All right, so my talking point. This is a big one. I only really have this one, but I think it's massive, and I need to go for it.
Okay.
Let's talk about influences and what you learn when you grow up. Bear with me on this, because I need to know this in detail. Now, let me lay a file out for you. Golzine found Ash, took him in, gave him a home, taught him things, taught him skills, taught him talents. Talking about wine, talking about all that sort of stuff. But kept him pent up in a condo, coveted him, kept him close, wouldn't let him get out of sight. Was his, belonged to him, and no one else. And if anyone actually said at any point, "No, we're going to take Ash away from you," goals, you'd be like, "No." Does that sound a touch familiar to you at this point? Because who's buying a fucking condo and refusing, or rather, I should say, you know, sidestepping the question of letting, you know, his current, you know, bow of his life, get away from him. Here's the thing.
Yeah, I have that written down as well. That, like, just like,
sorry, man.
No, please, like, no worries. I've got plenty more. But yeah, I mean, just like the grudges seem to be passed down in a way or multiplying. Yeah. Like, you have this sort of this covetousness. What I wrote down is weaknesses, but you're actually right in that it's far more specific than that. Not just the weakness, but the possessiveness,
the behavior.
In a sense, yeah.
Exactly. So this is the thing. Like, Golzine may have taught, you know, Ash various things, but there's things that he taught him indirectly. And this is the thing that I think I brought before, which is like, you know, a life of crime, a life of being possessed. How is that going to play into the relationship between Ash and AG? Because ultimately, they don't want to have that be a repeat. That's why I feared it was going to happen. And it is happening. Sure, Ash, you know, when Max says, you know, maybe he just be, you know, with us, he's very sheepish about it, which is not his normal way. But, like, normally, I just think he just literally look at him and say, no.
Yeah.
He's with me. Stays with me.
Yeah.
but that's not the case. And how much of that necessarily is Ash just being vulnerable and needing him there, you know, to keep him going as his reason for living is one thing. But I don't think it's unreasonable to say that, regrettably, Golzine has taught Ash, unbeknownst to him and unbeknownst to, you know, both of them, more than he realizes, and he's actually taking those lessons to heart and using them. And I'm wondering if there'll become a point in which that'll happen. I mean, the funny thing is, right, this title of this episode reminded me of Beauty and the Beast, because the structure's similar. What was the thing that happened in the Beauty and the Beast? You know, Princess sends him in castle, refused to be let go.
A lot of singing by cutlery and various other household objects.
I'm just not imagining Ash getting in the condo and then, like, Ash comes out and goes, Be our guest. Sorry.
Put ourselves to the test.
Yeah, exactly.
Order your revolver and we provide the rest.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, enough about Tales as Old as Time. So, to me, like, it feels very similar.
Now you got that fucking song. God damn it.
Oh. I have destroyed you. I'm very sorry.
Oh, but man.
But to me, it feels kind of similar.
Yeah, I mean, well, Ash has only known, like, that sort of... I mean, he's never known love, but he's known that sort of selfish
behavior.
What
is love?
You know?
Baby, don't hurt me.
No. No more singing. No, there'll be no singing here. No singing.
Well, anyway. Well, here's the thing, right? When you're very young, if you meet someone for the first time who you adore and who makes you feel like a complete person, I wouldn't agree with the behavior, but I'd understand where it comes from.
Yeah.
You know, that you want to, you know, cling to them. Clinginess is what I probably describe it as. But where does the clinginess end? It comes from being an immature 17-year-old. And where does the, oh yeah, I've been treated a certain way all my life, and I'm going to unconsciously follow those same steps.
Yeah, no, totally. And where do you... Where does the understanding for his plight and the sort of empathizing with how Eiji might feel begin? Yeah. You know, because we talked about, like, how Eiji makes him feel like he can be unguarded and kind of unburden himself and let out everything that's pent up. And you feel for Ash. He's only got that one safe haven to do that. But, I mean, Eiji's still a person with his own needs, his own wants. Like, he can't just be used as, you know, a comfort object, like, that they kind of talk about.
Max says as much. Mm-hmm. Max, literally, like, the characters are aware of it. Again, another refreshing element of this show is that, you know, characters are savvy enough to recognize that that isn't good for him. Like, yeah, I understand that he needs it right now. And it actually even, you know, gives the get-out clause of, like, you know, doesn't need to be forever, just right here, right now, I need you here with me.
Yeah.
Whether or not he puts that into practice when the push comes to shove. Like, I can imagine, like, say, another Ace episode down the line, AG says, look, I've got to go. Can't be here anymore. I can't cope with this. I have to leave. And then Ash just steps in front and says, no, stay in here with me. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it. It'll be okay. Like, you know, in that kind of soft, alluring tone.
I'll have my guy bring you whatever you need.
Mm-hmm. More Japanese bento boxes.
Yeah, exactly. More to the fly will bring us more tofu.
Or, you know, 0.357 magnums if you want.
Yeah, exactly.
You could have two. Or about the 0.45 ACP, you know, fucking, you know, operator. Anyway,
strong that's the point zero I to... and armor-piercing bullets. Your order is here.
God, imagine if Uber did that. Oh, fuck. Anyway, that's the point I wanted to make, is that something to keep an eye out going forward is how much of Ash's behavior is going to unintentionally start resembling Golzine's in its own way.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a thought for you, right? I know, but, like, that's the thing that happens sometimes.
But it's
like,
true. It's true. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. When people grow up in abusive environments like that, inevitably an element of that abuse will become burned in their psyche as the way they treat others.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people who are abused, be it from, like, you know, the relatively minor to the stuff that Ash has gone through, like, they'll, unless they are literally paragons of virtue born from, like, you know, the hips of fucking God or some shit, they're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna fucking know, like, you know, that that kind of abuse necessarily is wrong. Like, it's institutionalized, it's normalized, and they'll in some way just let that out a little bit every now and again. So, you know what I would imagine happening, and I hope it doesn't because it'd be awful to watch, but I can see it happen, is, as much as we said before, like, you know, they eventually, Eiji, you know, might be able to, like, you know, pat Ash on the shoulder or, like, you know, give him a hug when they're both out of makeup, stuff like that, you know, be a bit more intimate. What if Ash in turn tries to force intimacy on him? And maybe ultimately stops himself, recognizes what's going on, sees shades of the, like, Golzine infecting his head, like, you know, that could be a thing. Because here's the thing, like, this is again what I said over the course of these many episodes, in that the narrative we present, been presented so far in how relationships work in Banana Fish is either A, one of, you know, destruction, or like, self, like, you know, the relationship's over, which is specifically Max and Jessica, the one hit relationship we've had. And the rest of it has basically been, you know, gay power plays. Now, Banana Fish is not, of course, endorsing any of that. It's very clearly in the wrong. But when a show like this codes it like that, it then needs to offer a thesis statement in reverse, which should be, of course, you know, a loving relationship. But getting there isn't going to happen overnight, especially not with someone as damaged as Ash. He's, you know, trying to become a regular person. Like, that's why we've seen these shades of him having this banter and this flirtation with AJ. But it's only happening in fits and spurts, and of course the very real threat of what they've got to deal with is still out there. So there's a lot to get through. But I'm foreseeing a bumpy ride in their future as a result. I mean, I'll confess, I've had moments where stuff that's happened to me when I was younger, not on the level, by the way, of what's happened to Ash, not even close. But I'm just talking about, like, you know, abusive context, etc., etc., like, you know, where people have just been generally shit to me. Like, that's poisoned myself in a little way here. And I've reacted quite viciously to people as a result of all. Like, I've had speech patterns that come out of me that I never thought I'd say, but they are similar in kind to, you know, the way that I was treated when I was younger. So it can and does happen. So I'd be very interested to see what the show does with this. I am very confident that it's going to end in the positive, unless it takes, you know, the visual novel bad ending where everyone just fucking dies at the end. Star-crossed lovers issues, you know. I mean, we've all seen Romeo and Juliet. We know how that ends.
The X-1999 ending. Mm. That is... Boy.
Oh, the Phantom ending.
The Phantom ending. Well, at least some characters lived, right? Or am I wrong about
that?
Oh,
the fucking criminals. Yeah, the ones that the director or the writer said, you know, crime doesn't pay except for this fucker who just sits in the fucking tub drinking wine all day.
I mean, Christ almighty.
Oh, revisiting that show in my brain just makes me chuckle.
Fucking show! God, it's so fucked.
It's
shit.
Crap is what it is. Yeah. It's a bag of crap.
What
anyway,
were we talking
I'm done.
About? I feel like there was
I'm done.
A
I'm
legitimate
done. No, I'm
point
done.
I wanted to make. Fuck.
Phantom does that to you. It makes you forget legitimate points.
Nope,
but it was something
gone.
About, like, you know,
it's gone.
You know, like the idea of abuse passing down generations and all that, even if not necessarily to the same degree.
No, I mean, because I mean, I think that you're onto something, and that's a good, it's a good observation that,
right.
You know, he's making plans to put his bird in a cage, you know, and he was in a cage. So yeah, I think that's good. I don't fucking remember what it was. So, maybe I will, remember later.
Ah, people in charge delineating now. I'm the one who's allowed to swear and you're not. I'm the potty mouth and you're the sensible one. We're getting roles, you know, sense here. I'm you know, the town jester. I get to be the potty mouth.
They clearly haven't heard our podcast.
Oh, man.
Like, that was... That show... Phantom nearly broke me mentally. I swear. It was... And for some reason...
Oh, he's got the... Yeah, I know where this is going. He still has
this?
It.
I have this visual novel. Phantom Inferno.
Just to throw it out there, Doc, again, as a reminder, like, that's the original material. Like, it's surely got to be decent. As opposed to, like, the actual show, because, of course, Jenna Urobuchi was the guy who did the original material of, you know, such famous psychopaths and Madoka Magica.
Man, I hope the ending is different when I get around to playing this. It's a DVD, by the way. You put it in a DVD player and select things. Mm-hmm. It's not like a computer game otherwise. It's a DVD. Like, it's a very weird, like, artifact of a very particular time. Anyway, I'm going to put this away now.
Good. Feel free also to have a listen to our Phantom Record, the Phantom podcast at some point, folks, in which we basically discuss a story that has similar bones to Banana Fish, but is inferior in practically every respect.
That was
vastly inferior.
The X-1999 is what I was going to... Yeah, I did mention X-1999 because Shaddam was talking about like horrible endings where everyone dies. This is what I brought up because, you know, not to spoil a 20-year-old movie or anything, but spoilers for X. At the end, every single character that you've met throughout the film, which is like between 15 and 20, is dead except for one, and he's holding the head of the last other character that he just decapitated and like weeping, and that's the movie. Everyone dies.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
One by one over the course of the film.
Yay.
Okay. Oh, all right, I got to steer us back on course.
Next point.
So I'll go with my next talking point here, and just briefly say that I thought the witch ash is the real ash discussion that was happening, kind of in AG's head, but also at different points, Max and eBay, you know, when they're talking about seeing him in Boston at his house, like in the different kind of attitudes. And AG's like, well, is it the pumpkin story boy, or is it the murderer? Is it some kind of, you know, concoction of the two? Is it a mix? And I mean, I think that is an interesting question and interest. It, like, do you think that's a false dichotomy, or do you think it has to be one or the other? I mean, do you think that those two kind of separate things can live within a person?
I don't even think it's just those two things. I think there's many more things. I mean, Ash brings up the fact that he was raped when he was 8, and he doesn't explicitly mention it, but I am 99% certain he's referring to the incident with the baseball card.
Yes, yes.
So the thing is, like, these two things, like the AG mentions, are not a dichotomy, in my opinion, because what makes a person is so much more complicated than just simply two life moments. Even one that's as crippling as, you know, that incident was. There's a lot more to it than that. Mm-hmm. So, to me, I think the answer is neither, but they're a puzzle piece, you know. I think the problem is that the puzzle of Ash as a person that makes him a regularly living human being, as opposed to he is now, like, you take a puzzle that's 1,000 pieces and you pour it on the floor and then you spread it all over the place. Like, you can reassemble it and it'll make a coherent picture eventually. And maybe you'll see, like, little bits of bobs. Like, if you've got a fucking puzzle of trains, you'll see one train as you build up and all that. You've got one picture of many pictures. But it's not going to happen overnight. It's certainly not going to happen immediately, putting that back together. Yeah. So I think those are two of the puzzle pieces in the much larger picture. And currently, AG's just there like, oh, shit. Oh, yeah. Crap. Where's this one going? Where's the walkthrough for this?
Yeah. It's like, this one looks like a mountain, and this other piece is the Skittles logo. This doesn't make sense. But, like, yeah, but I agree. I'm with you. I think it is worth thinking about. And similar to the talk we had about Yuen-Lung, yesterday, and the kind of various seemingly contradictory attitudes and strains of thought that are within him. I don't know. I mean, the more I've thought about this throughout my life, it's just like, I think the, yeah, if you do think of a person's life as a puzzle, the longer that person's life stretches out, the more contradictions or seeming contradictions that you're going to find. Just because that's humanity.
Why do you make that sound like the ending of line of a musical? That's humanity.
Da, 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 da.
When you're not making sense and you're sat on the fence, that's humanity.
Yeah, right, right.
Fucking tap me, Hollywood. I will write you a fucking stage show. Anyway.
Oh, man, that... Luther says that the scene in the middle of the episode where Ash sort of confesses and lets Ajin. It's even more detailed. Oh, that's so heartbreaking, man. Even in the anime, it was like, I just felt pierced. I felt pierced watching it. It was so beautiful. I mean, I can't even, like, it. I wonder, I mean, I know that if folks have read the manga, hold on one moment. Gotta go to break. Humanity.
We'll be right back after these messages. We'll be right back.
Hello, sorry about that, folks.
It's okay, Doc was just getting a call about his, you know, cryptocurrency stocks. They're currently in freefall. Oh, snap.
Yeah, the goose has flown the coop.
To indeed.
To mix my metaphors.
I'm surprised Goose Coin isn't actually a thing, to be honest. Pink Goose Coin.
Oh, man. All right. What are we even talking about?
I think we were ending up on discussion of, you know, who is the real Ash and who isn't, I believe, when I was mentioning about the puzzle.
Right. Okay. Do you have more talking points?
I actually did think of something, come to think of it.
All right,
which
let me
is,
get the sounder.
Next point.
Okay, go.
Let's go. All right, so this has actually kind of been festering my head a little bit since I think it might have been Max who brought up in the actual episode, fully of when it almost like pokes itself in the face a little bit. But here's the thing. Now, this again, like I've said in previous episodes, is not so much a criticism as an observation, and it'll stand the test of time whether or not it bears true or not. But when Max says, you know, that Ash is like, you know, reliant on aging and all that, and, you know, doesn't really have a personality, there is a grain of truth to that. And I'm starting to get the impression Banana Fish is letting all the emotional heavy lifting, or most of it, fall on Ash's shoulders. He's the one who we have a very clearly defined history of, as far as his backstory goes. Like, we know pretty much what happened to him from a young age right until now. Like, you know, what happened with his birth mother, what happened with his, you know, half-brother, what happened when, you know, that incident with the baseball coach, and then Golzin when he ran away. Like, his path through life has been very clearly charted, and we understand him quite well. AG has had footnotes at best. And to me, I want to see AG get more involved in, like, some part of his backstory. Now, I'm not saying he needs a tragic or, you know, tainted, like, life history to be relevant. But we got some part of that with the pole vaulting thing and how he felt let down by that. But I'm feeling right. We need to get some more into this. Because everything's happening to Ash right now. That's understandable to a certain degree, but, like, is this not wearing thin on AG? Like, for someone who's seen all the stuff he's seen, he's actually doing remarkably well.
Yeah.
Which is a bit strange, I will say.
His secret life of crime, are you waiting for it to be revealed?
I mean, you know, for all that we might say, you know, he's not exactly the most world-wise kid, he does have stones. Like, you know, he's made of stern stuff. He coped with this shit.
He's come along since the first episodes, for sure.
Mm. Yeah.
I love that he got to kind of go back a little bit to being being his just sort of funny, tender, silly self, making his faces
Ash. A complete goofball.
Yeah, like, are you really going to keep doing that stuff? You know, stealing, gunfighting.
Oh,
he was so huffy, like, at him for, like, there's other ways to be brave. Like, that was just, like, he gave me life, man. It was adorable. A really, really good, like, talk about exhaling. After such a, like, just heavy, like, emotional scene the night before, that was a chance for me, the viewer, to exhale, I have to say.
For sure. Yeah, exactly. So that's more of an observation at this point. I'm just thinking, like, you know, I want to see more from AG's side. Because the funny thing is, like, the way this show is actually leaning at the moment, it is actually, you know, true that Ash can't rely on him forever. Apologies.
Yeah.
I've said before, like, you know, to me, the ideal relationship is one way in which you can rely on each other, but you don't need each other to function. You know, you complement each other. And I would say that Ash and AG do to a certain extent, but at the moment, for reasons that make perfect sense, I should stress, by the way, like, think of Ash as, like, you know, a stone leaning on something, leaning against the wall, and AG is that wall. Take the wall away, stone falls over. That's what will happen to him. He will collapse if he disappears. But will there come a point in which, hell, new theory for an ending, they both live, everything's great, but the ending is of AG boarding the plane to leave the country.
You've gone from the X ending to the Escaflowne ending.
Yeah, but the reason I say that is that, you know, like, I'm always...
We have to be apart. I have to go change my world and make a difference here. You you have your own world to live in.
We'll enjoy your ale.
We'll never be apart in our hearts. That's where our real connection was made, and that's where it will continue to live.
Yeah, enjoy your airline peanuts. Right.
Drink a Temtay for me when you cross the border.
Fucking Temtay, let down. Boom. Anyway, so the funny thing is, like, there's two ways this can go. Either, you know, they change over time, like, you know, they have that possessiveness element that I mentioned before, which is challenged and dismantled. Like, that's the thing, like I've said before, characters create stakes. So if, you know, Ash does, like, you know, say, you know, you're not leaving my, you know, tower, Rapunzel, you fucker, then that could be challenged and brought down. Or maybe it does end, you know, with them not ultimately hooking up, but then leaving for different shores. Basically, for me, the minimum I would be happy with is to just see Ash be a complete person by the end of this. Or at the very least, on the road to it. Because I don't think I would ultimately be happy with the outcome of the show if it turns out that he literally cannot live without aging. Even after all this, you know, nasty mobster business is wrapped up. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean... Okay, first of all... Blue Sea in chat. I can't help it. Look, my building that I'm in now has been without air conditioning for 3 days, and it's in Nashville, Tennessee, so it's hot. I read the first two parts of Albert Camus' L'Étranger, The Stranger. So I'm not in the best of states. I'm not like a happy boy and banana fish. So there's a lot of things that are sad that are happening in my life. So this is why I'm thinking of X and Escaflowne. But no, to your point, like, I actually think that that's a really good observation. Like, if the ending was, God, I mean, you want them to be together. Yeah. And you want them to have their moment of, like, completeness. You know, a sort of eternal moment that'll live on within them, to where, like, when they do go their separate ways to work on themselves, that will be able to keep their fire burning for each other and to keep them going throughout the harder times in life. Because you do want them to have that, like, time where their relationship is healthy. And they both see each other fully for who they really are, and they're both able to be totally vulnerable with each other, and at peace. But I agree. I mean, if they have to stay together, or they do end up staying together, I mean, this show can pull off just about anything, it seems. But just thinking about it now in my head, something about it would ring false. I'd have to see how it would play out.
This is also similar to what we said about the idea of them not touching on sex-related stuff and keeping it, you know, more about, like, a platonic kind of relationship, even if it's just implied, you know, that kind of thing. It's unfortunate because, like, I'm always impressed with a show that could juggle this many things simultaneously and do a good job of it, but that also leaves it set up for high standards and, you know, it's now got to deliver on all of it. That's the annoying thing. And it's even self-aware to the point where it recognizes that, yes, this character is leaning on the other to the point of unhealthiness, especially when the need for that leaning disappears. Like, I'm not saying what he's doing right now is, you know, a bad thing, necessarily, because there are times in which, you know, you literally need to have that kind of person who you can just totally rely on, just, you know, to give you that warmth and comfort. But it isn't going to be that way forever. So... that's the problem with success, you know. When you are successful and when you do something very well, you're unfortunately, you know, condemning yourself to pushing yourself out a little bit harder next time and ultimately delivering on it in the long run.
Yeah, it's true. Do you think, and maybe this will be kind of be a summary of a lot of the things we talked about in this episode, or relating to this episode, do you think Ash and AG's relationship is a healthy one at the moment?
I think the answer to the question I should give is it's what they need right now. And maybe that in itself counts as being healthy. But it's not something that can stay as is. It can't stay as it is right now. I think the way that I perceive it is this. I can see from what the story's given us at this point that there are storm clouds on the horizon. I'm not talking about the looming threat of Golzine or Look Young or Fast Fingers fucking Arthur, the brown-nosed motherfucker that he is. I'm talking more about what it means just for their interactions. So, The question then is, will they get through that storm all right? Will they ride it out? Will they get to the other side unscathed? Will they be scathed?
Yeah.
If they are scathed, will they recover from it? So for what it is what they need right now, and indeed, I think AG says as much as that, and Ash indeed says, like, they don't speak in absolutes when they talk about these moments.
Yeah.
Like, AG says, you're like, maybe it won't matter now, but it will later, and Ash says, it doesn't need to be forever. Like, speaking in absolutes is like, you know, it is what they need right now, but it needs to change and evolve and grow at some point. And that is going to be a challenge, I would argue, that's going to be more difficult for them to get over than the actual physical, you know, real issue of the fucking Mafia. Like, what's more challenging to these characters right here? You know, is it the mobster-related stuff? Or is it the actual, like, arc of their relationship? I can't immediately answer that, and I think that should be a Twitter poll, actually. Like, what's the biggest challenge Ash and AG face right now? Developing and growing their own relationship or surviving Dino's, you know, fucking hate boner. His fucking hate boner. Or as, you know, some of us call it, the Vengerection.
Oh.
The Vengeance Erection.
God, that's good. I think you made it. That's a really interesting point because, I mean, if two people who are mentally and emotionally kind of broken, certainly Ash more so than AG, but AG does have his own problems that to him are real and huge and like deeply existentially affecting. They both have these issues coming into their relationship, and so I think it would probably be a tall order to be like, go and have a healthy relationship right away. They have to like work up to it, I guess. And I think that they are, like, I feel like, you know, I want to say that they'll get there because I feel like, I know it can be debatable to say this about Ash, but I think, yeah, I mean, deep down, I think that they both have caring and good hearts. And like that they will, if they're allowed to have their relationship evolve and continue and progress, I think that they could get to that or a facsimile of that. You know, I mean, and it's going to be stages. I mean, right now you could point the finger and say, like, there's too much, you know, AG's not, his needs aren't being met. He's not being treated like a full person. You know, he's just comfort object. Or you could say, like, I don't know, you could level your accusations. But like you said, like, this is not, you know, it's not the finished article. And I think that is important to keep in mind.
All right. I've exhausted everything I want to talk about. The only thing I would otherwise really want to talk about is, again, just to remind everyone that every time Arthur gets shat on, you know, it's like, banana fish. I give me such a cartoon villain who it's easy to hate and whom it's just joyous to see be completely, utterly inept. Like I said, so it's a fucking bagel, burns his apartment down. Arthur is so stupid he would put diesel in a fucking unleaded car. He would. He fucking would. That's my headcanon. Like, Arthur at some point later, I'm sure, will do something really awful and he'll be genuinely good at it. But honestly, at this point, I've just completely written him off as utterly useless. He is, like, he's arguably
so good. So good to hate.
Yeah, he is the Fatoshi of this show. Am I wrong? I'm waiting for your answer. Am I wrong?
Oh man, the Fatoshi of this show.
Am I wrong?
No.
Am I wrong?
No. Yeah. No. I have to make all these things polls. Okay. More difficult. Ash and AG beating the mafia? Or what did you say? Surviving the hate boner? Or no.
That's the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. Ash and AG working on put it to me.
Alright. What's more difficult? Ash and AG developing a healthy relationship for them to have after this is all over? Or B, surviving Dino's hate boner?
Developing a healthy relationship for when this is all over.
The thing is, Emily, Arthur got a bad haircut because he basically is a Dio fanboy, except he's nowhere near as interesting as or cool as Dio. Like, if Arthur had his own version of Roller-da, he would just be driving the road roller, you know, the steamroller, at like 2 miles an hour in that Austin Powers skit. Where he's like, you know, get out of the way! He's like, all the way across there, like, Ash, they're like, I'm gonna get you, Ash! And he's like, a good, like, 100 yards away easily. That's how bad he is.
The Futoshi of the show.
I'll take that prick.
Man, what a great poll.
We've done all right this episode. We've done all right.
Oh my god. I have to exhale. I'm gonna post the polls in chat. Please continue.
Man.
Well,
right.
This has been quite an eventful show.
This has been a great show.
Based on a great episode. I mean, I think this has been a phenomenal episode. But like, what do you rate it as, Shadon? How do you come down on this one?
Here's the thing, right? This episode is essentially what I would call a reward to the audience. Like, everyone's been wanting some moments in which the characters can, you know, relax and just be themselves for a little bit, even if there are, you know, asterisks and question marks around. And of course, we wanted to see Golzine get a little bit of his own comeuppance in some way. And yes, of course, to see Arthur, you know, get shat on. That's always great. Like, this show almost feels like it's cognizant of its own audience expectations and is delivering on them. And it makes sense for there to be these moments as well, so we can have these moments of real humanity, but also levity. Like, it's not totally distant from that before, because it weaves between the two really well. Like, yeah, we have the goofy bits, you know, with, you know, the pumpkin stuff and the bandages being applied. And then we get, of course, the moment in which Ash literally cannot fucking sleep because he's traumatized, probably PTSD, I would say, over what's happened with Sean, and he weeps in age. And I was like, it never, ever feels totally distant, unlike the previous episode where it did a little bit. It's honestly felt like a lot of fun, which is not what I mean, when I say a show is not fun, that doesn't mean it's bad. I wouldn't call the previous episodes of Banana Fish fun.
No.
Engaging entertainment. Mm-hmm. But not fun necessarily. Certainly not deliberately. I mean, like, I could call it fun because I riff on it and such, but that's not necessarily the same thing. Mm-hmm. So for me, this episode was exactly what was needed. It's what I hoped we would get, and it delivered on it in pretty much every way, shape, or form. My only misgivings of it, again, are the kind of long-term, you know, end-game kind of stuff that we'll have to wait and see. But for now, I am going to give it 5 out of 5 Tim Tays. Nailed it. It nailed every single thing it set out to do perfectly. Even little things. There was one thing I forgot to mention that I just really want to quickly bring up. It's only a small technical detail, but when the fly arrives, there's a moment in which Ash says to AJ, get behind the bed, and he pulls his gun out. And as the camera is slowly zooming in like that on him while he's got the gun in his hand, there's a sound of room noise. Now, if you've ever recorded audio for a podcast or anything, when you, before you start editing, you do clean up and you hear like a fizzing noise. That's room noise.
Hmm.
And the room noise actually gets just a tiny bit louder as it zooms in, like the volume goes up.
Hmm.
And it just helps build the tension a little bit. Even though it turns out to be nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, that's such a small fucking thing. But Studio Mappa went and did it. And it was great to have it in there. Like, I adore this show's little details. It's always fucking on point with them. Like, they actually fucking think about it. They think about this show and how to make it good and how to make the visuals work, how to make the audio work. They know what kind of music to use. They know when to use it. They know when silence is sometimes better. Than they use the fucking room noise that just goes up a tiny little bit to make you fire it and make you...
It's great. It's good stuff,
it's
man.
It's fucking brilliant. I'm just so happy. So yeah, this episode, 5 out of 5, no complaints. I wouldn't say it's perfect. Nothing is perfect, of course. I mean, like I say, I have my misgivings a little bit here and there, but they're only really long-term kind of stuff that doesn't hinder my enjoyment of this episode overall. And it was just an absolute hoot. I was enjoying every second of it.
Well, I've got news for you, Buster.
Are you going to give it 6 out of 5? Are you going to break the rules?
I'm going to give this episode, The Beautiful and the Damned.
I don't have a drum here, Doc. Don't make me fucking wait to do the drum roll.
No. 6 out of 5 pumpkins.
Oh, you fucker. You fucker.
Yes.
You fucker.
Just because of that sort of serious transcending moment in the middle of the episode, I cannot emphasize how good that middle of the episode was for me, how emotionally affecting, and how I really do think every single element of the production hit it out of the park. And it just, anime just doesn't get fucking better, man, than that scene.
No. I have to just say, right, the reason that we came to Banana Fish for Stream of Thought Season 3 was, well, after Franks, we needed something good. We had to. I couldn't do another show, not even a 12-episode one that was just bad or middling or uninteresting. I wanted something that was good. And so Banana Fish's reputation was something that I caught on my, you know, social media radar. People always thought quite highly of it. And from the 11 episodes we've seen thus far of it, it has delivered everything that I have heard of. Like, people, you know, people say, like, you know, don't believe the hype. Don't believe that kind of stuff. I would say in this case, you can. People have said very strong and very good things about it. Not without its flaws thus far, I will say, but they have been, you know, blemishes otherwise. So, yeah, I'm genuinely very happy to be covering the show, and particularly just glad that it's delivering both, you know, to my expectations and even sometimes exceeding them. Like, people said this was a great piece of work, and, well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
What more the fuck do you want me to say than that? I could go on for hours, like, discussing minutiae, but at the end of the day, Banana Fish is just legitimately punching hard.
Also, Fifi mentioned in chat that Arthur looks like those trolls with the hair. I fucking died inside. I lost it internally. I had to keep it together. Because I'm the model of professionalism on camera. Straight-faced. I had to keep it together. No, I mean, that's fucking hilarious just because
It's that old adage, though, Doc. It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I remember when they tried to market. So, originally, talk about demographics. I remember in America, anyway, originally those were marketed to girls, you know, because you could, like, mess with the hair and do the hair and everything. And they had the jewels in them. But then, they began to want the young boys demo. So they made battle trolls. So they had, like, the trolls in, like, knight
of
armor
course.
Or, like, vampire. And then they had this line of, I remember the TV show of this, too, called Stone Protectors. And they were the trolls, but the jewel in their chest was so big. And, like, the toy commercial was, like, one of those super cheesy 90s, like, really driving rock songs. It was like Stone Protectors, Trolls on a Roll.
Oh my
god. It was so good. It was so stupid. Oh man. The fucking
Does that mean we can get like a similar tie-in song for Arthur? The show like Arthur, he's a fucking useless dickhead. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Arthur.
Trash is Super Saiyan. Yeah.
And he's a real brown nose.
He really is. The pumpkin scene was incredible.
I'm sorry, I have to say, one thing we forgot to mention in the story is that Golzin leaves the country and leaves his entire squad, like, troop of men under Arthur's command. And I'm like, Golzin, look, all right, you fucked up with the goose thing. You really did. You didn't change your password every 90 days. You didn't put the script mix. You didn't put the correct mix of capital letters, numbers, and special characters in there. You didn't do that. You absolute clown. But that doesn't mean you have to double down on your idiocy by leaving this jack-off in charge.
Oh, boy.
Fuck's sake. The most Arthur's going to probably do is getting them to run some fucking Denny's for him or some shit. Jesus. Honestly.
He's going to, like, yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. I mean, how wrong will this go, I think, is the question to ask. Not will it succeed.
Man.
All right.
Fuck you, man. But anyway, thank you all, ladies, gentlemen, MBs, for joining us once again for Banana Fish. We're actually caught up again. I don't know if we'll
for a day.
For a day. Look, we are. We're just treasure this moment while I've got it, Doc. But yeah, where, Doc, can people find you on the good old internet?
At The Subtle Doctor on Twitter, where you can find me bitching about Kenny Omega or talking about Netflix and their wonderful offerings. And also anime sometimes. Mm-hmm. Please ask me about Banana Fish.
For sure. You can find me on Twitter at Shaden Sensei if you want to talk to me about Tim Tays. Or you want to talk to me about, yeah, fucking Tim Tays. Or if you want to talk to me about, you know, Banana Fish, anime, fighting games, writing, novels, blah, blah, blah. You know by now what I'm into. If anyone starts, you know, saying, like, Just for Men or something, though, I will come for you. Don't bring that up. I'm proud of my Chrome Dome. Proud of it. You can also find me at CuriousCatDemi/Shaden as well if you want to talk to me or ask me questions on that of a mostly non-political nature.
Very good. Very good. Well,
The thing is, Emily, to answer your question before we go, okay. The thing is password. The thing is, like, I've seen...
It's just
gone. The thing is, I actually get security bulletins at my place of work, which do feature as a talking point the top 10, like, most commonly used passwords. Cyapool is right. Ash is probably the password. It's probably that, three letters long, Ash. But usually it's stuff like ABC123, password, or let me in. And I tell you now, I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts that Golzin's password is one of those on that top 10 of, you know, like most commonly used and also most terrible passwords ever.
Hot link.
What if his password?
Hot links, 1986.
His password is literally banana fish.
Yes. Yep. That'd be good.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Cybersecurity wasn't what it is now back then.
In the halcyon years of 2012.
Although the fucking 80s.
Well, that's true. But spyware also admittedly wasn't a thing in the 80s as well, so they definitely updated that.
Yeah, that's true.
Unless Golzin, you know, was one of those victims of, like, you know, putting a floppy disk in he got from some random guy. But anyway. So yeah, ladies, gentlemen, MBs, thank you all so much again for joining us.
Thank you, everybody. Y'all are great.
If you enjoyed the show, feel free to let other fans of Banana Fish know. You know, like, the more people you get in here to talk about, it's always good to have everyone here shooting the breeze about. I don't know when we'll be back for 12. It'll probably not be tomorrow. It'll just give us a breather. It'll probably be sometime early next week, I suspect. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as always, it's always a delight having you all here. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time. And until then, embrace each other, everyone. It's the end of the universe. And a good night.
Goodbye. Mwah, and good night. Thank you.